Hey, good morning, happy Sunday, and happy Father's Day, and welcome to On the Weekend Edition. We are going to rerun the governor's interview last week. A lot of people didn't get to hear it, and I got cut off at the end of the show, so you don't know that you can go back and replay it on my website, voiceswired.com. But we do have something new from the Petty. Of course, he will be on right after the interview, so please stay tuned and listen to that. And of course, you know you have a little bit of commentary that you didn't get a chance to hear last week after the Petty. So listen, happy Father's Day. Enjoy it. I am off because it is Father's Day. Enjoy the replay and have an amazing Sunday. Good morning, Governor. How are you this morning?
I am outstanding. It's so good to be on with you.
I appreciate you. I'm honored. Listen, first, the first thing I want to say to you is thank you so much for coming back. I know that when you were a gubernatorial candidate and you sat down with me, you said that you'd be back. And when we scheduled for that interview, unfortunately, your grandma passed the night before. So, and I thought, well, once you became governor, that had probably escaped me. But here you are back again, and I'm so appreciative. You know, soldier to soldier, man to man, that you kept your word. So I appreciate that very much.
Well, listen, I appreciate you, and I appreciate your voice. And you know, and it is true. I mean, my grandmother, she ended up passing 5 days before election day. In fact, in my office, one of the pictures I have on my wall was one of the final pictures I have of her was her actually putting in her mail-in ballot for her grandson.
Oh wow!
And so I cherish that picture, and I cherish her. But it's great to be on with you.
Well, if it's true what they say, I mean, she knew the results before any of us did. So
that's right.
You don't have to worry about that. You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah, you know, it's amazing because she was, by the end of her life, she was so weak that we knew that she was not going to be able to make it to the convention center for the election night, for the victory night speech. And she would always just say, you know, I just want to see him. I want to see him, you know, win this thing. I want to see him win the nomination. But I believe from the bottom of my heart that God gave her a front row seat.
Oh, I'm sure.
For the night of our victory night.
Without a doubt. Well, I didn't have a front row seat, but I was there, and it was a great night. It was an excellent night. I was shocked that it was called so soon. You know, it was a very, very early call, and I was like, what? I wasn't even set up for it. You know what I mean? It was great. But listen, Governor, and look, have you gotten used to hearing yourself be called Governor yet? Is it what you thought it would feel like when you ran for this office, to hear yourself called Governor Moore?
You know, it's wild because you know, I never run for office before. I don't come from a political family. I don't come from a political lineage. You know, none of this was given. And so it is wild that, you know, you go and first you just had to show you had to be willing to outwork everybody.
Right.
But the other thing was, you can't ever forget where your power comes from. My power didn't come from the establishment. My power didn't come from, you know, people who were in the game or in the system who were like, oh, we're going to pick this guy who's never held elected office before to be the next governor.
Right.
My power came from the people. And so that's the thing I think we just continue to stay focused on in all of our work. So it's never lost on me. And it's still very humbling to know that you are, you know, every day you're coming into an office that is, that's, you know, the oldest operating state house in the country.
Yeah.
You're walking past the statue of Thurgood Marshall every time
I
walk into my office.
That's right.
It's not lost on me, like, the power of the moment. But I always stay focused on don't forget who put you there and don't forget why you're doing this work in the first place.
Awesome. Look, well, I'm going to jump right into it. We're about 3 weeks away from July 1st. When, you know, recreational use of marijuana in this state becomes legal. Did you have any concerns about signing bills 516 and 556 into law? Did you have any concerns about, I don't know, traffic on the roads or it being abused? Any of those concerns?
No, well, I mean, one thing we knew is that the this is what the people of the state asked for.
Okay.
They voted overwhelmingly for us to go into a recreational space for cannabis. And so the question was always just going to be, how are we going to make sure that we're properly implementing the bills? How are we going to make sure we're properly implementing the rollout that we're going to focus on, making sure that it's an equitable rollout?
Right.
And when I say equitable, that means not just, you know, not just social justice equitable, but it means financially equitable. How are we going to make sure that it's transparent and that there's this is not a cloak and daggers conversation about who and how and all this kind of stuff. It needs to be an openly transparent process. And how do we make sure that it's quick?
Right.
Because the thing that I did know is that if you continue to drag it out, and if we're talking about not opening a market for another 12 or 18 or 24 months, what you're doing is you're continuing to allow the illegal market to continue to grow and thrive and gain market share. And so I knew that there were a couple focus areas that we had to get done. And so so there wasn't a hesitation about honoring the will of the people. But where it was, though, is that we had to focus on making sure that this rollout was going to be correct, that we were going to establish an office of social equity. Okay. That was going to focus on assisting businesses with their licensing process, and particularly those who have been disproportionately impacted by the war of drugs, that we were going to, you know, have a real focus on having the Cannabis Business Assistance Fund. That's currently accepting applications for assistance to small businesses that okay. are entering into the adult use market. And so those were all things that I knew we really wanted to target as well.
Okay. Is there any truth to the fact that it's more difficult for African Americans to get dispensary license than it is non-African Americans?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an absolute fact to it. And that's not just in the state of Maryland. I think you've seen that show itself in rollouts all throughout the country.
Right.
And that's why there has to be a measure of intentionality. And when you think about things like the legislation that we're speaking about, what it does is it provides my administration with the tools that we need to actually stand up a successful industry that will both remediate some of the worst impacts of the war on drugs, but then also being able to focus on making sure we're creating pathways. And so that does include things like the Cannabis the Business Assistance Fund, which is helping small businesses, and particularly businesses by African Americans, right, and people of color. But then it's also things like the Community Reinvestment and Repair Fund, okay, which is really focusing on community initiatives in low-income communities, and particularly ones that were hurt by cannabis prohibition. And so I think if you allow the market to do what the market does, the market will end up hurting people who historically have already been hurt.
Right.
So that's why we got to be intentional, and we need to be unapologetic about being intentional about making sure this rollout is actually going to be an equitable one.
Okay. Now I'm going to drop a name on you that really concerns me. There's a guy that really concerns me. His name is Ron DeSantis, and I know he's down the road. He's down in Florida, but the things that he's doing, I think, are damaging and possibly something that a lot of other states will attempt to do, and that's remove African-American history from educational curriculums. Now, I heard your speech, your commencement speech, which was brilliant, by the way, at Morehouse, and I was very, very happy that you didn't straddle the fence on it. Can you be candid with my listeners and tell me what your opinion is on that?
Yeah, you know, when I was going down to Morehouse, I wanted to be very clear and thoughtful about what was the message that I wanted to send to these young brothers of Morehouse. And the thing that I told them is, like, you know, we can talk about some of the things they're going to be able to have to deal with, and some of the big challenges. But I wanted to highlight the fact that, you know what, one of the biggest challenges that y'all are going to be actually dealing with is this assault on truth.
Right.
And this assault on history.
Right.
And people trying to roll back and minimize your history. And I told them, you know, that we get into these debates sometimes, and you'll hear the arguments that people make. Well, they say, well, it's because we don't want students to feel discomfort or to feel guilt. And the more I continue to think about it, the more I scratch my head, because I'm like, that's not true.
Right. Exactly.
That's not the reason they're doing it.
Right.
They're not doing it because they are afraid of certain kids feeling guilty. They're doing it because they don't want you to understand your power.
Exactly.
Because, like, listen, I walk these streets in a way where, you know, and with a confidence and with a humility, because I know my history.
Okay.
Right. I know that I'm walking in the footsteps of Tubman, and I'm walking in the footsteps of Marshall, and I'm walking in the footsteps of Douglas. I'm walking in the footsteps of Cowboy. I'm walking in the footsteps of Reginald Lewis. I know my history. And because I know my history, you are never going to minimize me, and you're never going to minimize my future. And that is their fear.
Absolutely.
Their fear is that you're going to have people who understand their power, and our history is our strength. And so that's why I think we have to be unapologetic in the pushback against this.
How far do you think it's going to go? I mean, because as one state goes and gets away with things like this, other states will attempt who have that same agenda. How far do you think this will go? And do you think it's something that needs to be federally handled?
Well, I don't think we need to let this state get away with it now. I think there needs to be consequences. I think we need to make bigotry expensive. I think states need to be punished for this kind of behavior. And what I mean by that is this: it's, you know, both by how we're thinking about legislation, but I'm talking about this. If you have a conference in a state that thinks it's okay to ban history and ban books, who thinks it's okay to put children under investigation when they do book reports on Stonewall,
right,
or put teachers under investigation when you're showing a Disney movie that happens to have a gay character, or when you're doing things like saying that children should not be allowed to read, or we're banning the reading of The Bluest Eye or Beloved inside of classrooms. I think that if you're having a conference down there, take your conference out and bring it elsewhere. If you're starting a business down there, and you're starting a business in a state where women's reproductive choice and reproductive health is now being pulled and they're criminalizing it, go somewhere else.
Right.
Build your business somewhere else. I want people to come to Maryland because I want people to understand that bigotry should be expensive. That's the way you're going to end this.
You know, I did a show a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned how you strengthened the abortion rights laws in the state. And one of the things I said is that by you doing that, a lot of kids are going to come to Maryland who are enrolling in schools now, and that enrollment rate was going to go up. Was that something that you took into consideration?
100%.
Okay.
This is, you know, by being a more inclusive state, we're also going to be a more competitive state.
Okay.
You know, we're actually, in fact, just recently signed an executive order that actually focuses on economic competitiveness in the state of Maryland. And we're really looking at economic competitiveness in every single way. How are we asset mapping our state? How are we investing in industries of the future? How are we reducing the regulatory red tape? How are we increasing liquidity for small businesses? So there's a whole lot that we're doing to increase Maryland's competitiveness. But one of the things that we are talking about in the executive order is actually focusing on this idea that there is a political risk calculation.
Okay.
That we've got to factor in for some of these other places. And so if you're an educator inside of a state and you're now being told what you can and can't teach, and the things that you're teaching are now being banned, come to the state of Maryland and teach. We've got an educator shortage here that we want to address.
Right.
If you are a student who's now in a University of Florida system, for example, and they have now just banned things like gender studies inside of your coursework, so literally the coursework that you were studying is now no longer allowed to be taught.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Come to the state of Maryland. So yes, I mean, I actually think that this is not just the morally right thing to do to create a more inclusive and open society. This is actually an economic competitiveness argument as well that we're planning on moving on.
Well, thanks for making me look like a genius, because I said that, but I wasn't sure. But it felt like it to me.
You were spot on. You were spot on.
Talking about education, what about here in Maryland, in particular Baltimore? What's going on with that? Because it just seems to not be very good across the board. Are you and the mayor, have you guys, that dynamic duo, have you guys gotten together and come up with a plan and how to increase the test scores?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, and you think about education, where I've said unapologetically that, you know, the education is going to be the foundation of everything we're trying to get done here. And if we can get education right, if you get public education right in a state, everything else is going to make sense and everything else is going to work. And so we're working where, you know, so you know, while the State Board of Education is an independent entity, independent from the governor's office, you know, we are working in close collaboration to make sure that they don't just have the resources and the tools. I mean, we made historic funding in this year. We put more funding in public education than any governor in the history of the state of Maryland.
Okay.
But also making sure we have to increase accountability, that it's not just about increased funding, but you want to make sure that the funding is being used wisely, and being you know, processed for all the different entities that make educational success a greater reality for all of our kids. And so, yeah, we're working very closely with MSDE, and I know all the local districts are pushing and working very closely with us to make sure that they don't just have the resources that they need, but that we have proper accountability measures as well.
Okay, and I'm assuming that goes with crime as well, because where there's poor education, typically there's a lot of crime. And so assuming that you and the mayor are working on that together as well to come up with some kind of ideas to help reduce crime, in particular in Baltimore.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, there's no greater priority for any chief executive than making sure your people are safe.
Right.
It's the number one thing that you've got to focus on. It's the number one thing you've got to do as a chief executive. And that means, you know, really creating, as we call it, you know, the all of the above approach about how we're thinking about public safety here in the state of Maryland. And when I say all the above, it does mean things like we have got to get these illegal guns out of our communities and out of our neighborhoods. People have way too much access to firearms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we cannot have people who are just armed to the teeth and bringing firearms everywhere. That is not making anybody safer. But it also does mean that you've got to not just increase accountability for people that are violating the law, but it also means we got to drain up this pipeline of people who fall into that category in the first place.
Right.
And that's why you do things like the record investments in public education. That's why you focus on job retraining and job reskilling and stop making it so that people, that the only options that they seem to have are options that are going to end up getting them in trouble or putting them on the opposite side of the law. That's why we focus on $110 million in our budget for things like mental health and mental health supports. And so we really are taking very much an all of the above approach, where it is both about creating measurements of accountability for people who break the law. It means that we are going to support those who are in our communities and our first responders and law enforcement, whose job it is to make sure the communities are protected. But also, I am not interested, and we cannot just simply think we are going to militarize our way out of this. That's not the way this is going to work.
Right.
You've got to approach both the pipeline as well as increase accountability.
One last thing. When I walk in around Annapolis, in particular around the dock, I feel a certain way. I feel the history, like it's not lost on me. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I almost feel like my ancestors are looking at me, and I can see what they saw when they stepped off the boat. Tell me about your march from the docks of Annapolis to your inauguration. What inspired that?
Well, you know, one thing I think people are realizing about me is I move with intentionality. We don't try to do anything by accident, because I don't think anything is an accident, right? And when I thought about what was the message that we wanted to send on that morning, where I was about to be inaugurated as not just the 63rd governor of the state of Maryland, but the first African-American governor in our state's history, only the third who's been elected in this country's history. And I knew I wanted to start down there, because I knew that the history of our journey was important and something we should never lose sight on. So started down at the Annapolis docks, which is one of the oldest slave ports in our country's history.
Correct.
And as you said, you know, then marched with a couple hundred folks, marched from the docks up to the state house where I was sworn in. And by the way, the state house was built by the hands of enslaved people.
Yes.
And it was interesting, because when people said, well, he's starting at the first minutes of his administration, he's starting with indoctrination. I'm like, that's not indoctrination. It's history.
Right. Right.
It's facts. And it wasn't done to make people feel bad. It was done to make people feel empowered.
Right.
That this is our collective journey. This is our path. And you are right, where I think the fact that when people are looking at us in this moment, it's true. And I think we're being looked at from both the past and the future. That the past is looking at us, and they're hoping that we are honoring the commitments and the sacrifices that they made. And the future's looking at us, where they're saying that we, in this moment, they're hoping that we are building a better future, because that's what they are going to inherit. And so I think those are the two, that's the vice grip.
Right.
But I think for all of us, that we should walk through life understanding that we're being looked at from both the past and the future. in the present. And that's why we've got to make every moment matter.
Well, I got to be honest. I was very impressed that it was a diverse crowd that was marching with you. Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you? Because you're a hot commodity in the Democratic Party. Let's be honest. Are you? And if you're looking to move on, are you concerned about you being too black of a governor for some constituents that voted you in that are not black? Does that cross your mind?
No. First, I'm not looking to move on. I'm loving what I'm doing. I am not going anywhere. I know for a fact I've got 1,321 days left in my first term, and I plan on going for a second.
All right, man.
So
okay.
We're having a good time, and we're going to keep it going.
Okay.
But the other thing that I know is this: is we ended up winning this race with more individual votes than anyone who's ever run for governor in the history of the state of Maryland. We ended up winning of the 24 jurisdictions in the state of Maryland. We won 16 with a higher voter count than a Democrat had ever won. And here's what I know when you look at the numbers, because I'm a numbers guy. You don't get to those numbers by just winning African Americans.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, and you don't get to those numbers by just winning Democrats.
Correct.
I think the reason that we were able to win so overwhelmingly was people saw that we were speaking to their issues. People saw that we were speaking to their lives, to the things that they wanted to do, and the hopes and the aspirations that they thought we could bring forward. You know, and I've told people I am who I am. And I'm influenced and I am shaped by the past that I've had,
right,
and I'm shaped by the history that I know and that I understand. And I'm unafraid to speak on it. But the thing that I also know is the reason that we won so overwhelmingly. And I think the reason that so many people in the state are excited about the direction that we're going in right now is because they know that every single day we're fighting on their behalf.
Right.
And I think that's what not just keeps us going, that's also what continues to keep our support.
Wow. Well, listen, Governor Moore, I am so happy that you joined me. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking your time, because it's very, very, very busy time for you. So thank you so much for being with me, and I hope I get to speak to you again.
Listen, I am so grateful for you. I'm grateful for your leadership, and I'm thankful. And let's make this a repeated conversation, because it really is exciting to see everything you continue to do with our community.
Awesome, man. You have a great day, okay, and a great week.
You too. God bless, man.
All right, Governor. You too. Bye bye. All right, like every week, I know you hear the music, and that can only mean one thing on this show. That means it is time for the Petty. Let me give him a call and see what he's got in store for us this week.
Brother B, good morning.
It is the Petty. Good morning to you, sir.
Well, first of all, let me say happy Father's Day to all of your listeners who are men, and happy Father's Day to you.
Hey, happy Father's Day right back at you, big guy. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Now, you know, there are a lot of single mothers out there, and they raise their kids. I know that, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, sometimes a single mother's a mother and a father to their children, and I get it, I understand it, but you know what? This is our day.
It's our day.
All guys out there, happy Father's Day to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. What you got for me, man? There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, Brother B, but let me tell you something, Brother B. Now, I told you several weeks ago I had something for you. You ain't believe it. A lot of people ain't believe it. There's been a buzz. Here it is right here. The Oakland A's will be moving to Vegas.
Okay.
I told you, Brother B, you ain't believe it. A lot of people ain't believe it, but it's going to happen. It's for sure. Check this out, Brother B. Look, there have been a lot of things going on out there. That, we're on the East Coast.
Right.
Out here. We're up and down the East Coast, and how much do we really give a damn about what's going on out in the West?
Right.
We really
right.
don't. But check this out. The lawmakers in Vegas have approved the funds for a stadium to be built for the Oakland A's. They will be doing what their brothers or sisters, or whatever you want to call them, the Raiders have done, and they are moving their team to Vegas. Man, if you gotta remember, the Raiders and the Oakland A's used to share a stadium out there in Oakland.
That's right.
Years ago.
The Oakland Coliseum.
You're absolutely right. But guess what?
What's that?
The A's will be moving to Vegas. It's going to happen. I told you, Brother B. I told you weeks ago.
You did.
I told you months ago.
You did.
Yeah, it's happening.
Well, will they remain an American League team?
They will remain American League team. And you know what, Brother B? It's something that should be said about teams that are moving. You know, teams, if you want to move, I don't have a problem with that. You want to go to greener pastures. But, let's, you know, I talked to someone, Brother B, a couple of days ago, and we were talking about teams moving to different cities, different states. But you know one thing we talked about? We talked about why Vegas?
Right.
Why Nevada? Does Vegas really need a team? And we're going to talk about Vegas teams because there's one team in Vegas you know I love and you know they're hot. You know I'm going to talk about.
The ones on the ice.
Let's talk about why Las Vegas. Las Vegas is a tourist town. Las Vegas is a town for gambling, and they make a whole lot of money. We talk about sports teams. We talk about sports teams in general. They bring a lot of money and a lot of revenue to the city and the state. Does Vegas really need the money? Vegas makes their money off of gambling.
Right.
They make their money off of tourism. Do they need a sports team in Vegas? I mean, let's be honest, brother. They really need a sports team out there, bringing more money to that city, to that state.
I mean,
they're making some money.
Yeah, but I don't know. Clearly, somebody thinks that they do.
You know? Yeah, well, they do. And, you know, the A's, it's reality. The A's will be moving to Vegas.
Okay.
So, you know what? And let's talk about Vegas for a minute. As a matter of fact, over the course of 2 days, and I'm talking about Monday and Tuesday, Florida came. And I told you about Florida being a hot place. And I'm talking about not only the heat, I'm talking about a hot sports town because they got the Tampa Bay Rays out there tearing it up. They had the Heat in the NBA Finals. They had the Panthers in the NHL Finals. But you know what? All of a sudden, Florida became a team, a city, a state that turned from champs to chumps. And what I say, right, because in the course of 2 days, they had two major sport teams losing the finals. I'm talking about the Heat losing to those Denver Nuggets in the NBA Finals. And then I'm talking about, you know who I'm talking about, and I'm talking about those Vegas Golden Knights take to the Florida Panthers. And let's talk about the Heat first. Now, the Heat were a team that was put together, and they really only had one big star, and I'm talking about Jimmy Butler. And I feel sorry for that young man because when he tried to do all he could to help the Miami Heat try to win the NBA championship, and they fell to those Denver Nuggets. We're talking about the Joker, who, I mean, you know what, Brother B? He showed why he is one of the better players in the league.
Yeah.
He showed why he is an NBA MVP type of player, because him and Jamal Murray took that team on their backs, and they won the NBA championship.
I got to be honest, man. I watched the Joker travel so much. I watched him push off so much. He got away with so much that he's got a nice touch. He's got a great mid-range for a big guy. He's got a great three for a big guy. He's just so clumsy, and he takes so many steps that they don't call. I mean, I don't know.
Well, you know what, Brother B? The NBA is not like the NBA from back in the day. So, but right now, the Denver Nuggets, congratulations to them on their first NBA title.
Yeah, congrats.
And now we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about those Golden Knights. You know, I love them boys. They call them the Misfits of the NHL because, you know, they got a mix of youth and talent.
Right.
I say Misfits because most of their veterans on that team were cast off from other NHL teams.
Right.
But let me tell you something, Brother B. The Oakland A's, I'm sorry, the Oakland A's will be the Vegas A's, the Vegas Raiders. They better call that team and say, hey, what can we do to bring a championship to our organizations? Listen, Brother B, that team has been in existence for only 6 years. They've been to two Stanley Cup finals, and they won one. They've been in the playoffs for 5 out of the 6 years of their existence. That organization is doing something right. It ain't no mistake. It's like, it's not a fluke. That team's red hot. I like those guys, man. The Golden Knights. Congratulations to those guys. That's my hockey team. You know, we all got our teams in baseball, football, hockey, basketball. Let me tell you something, Brother B. I love those Golden Knights from Vegas.
I think we get it. You love the Golden Knights.
I think y'all got to like the Golden Knights. I like what they do. And here's a little something right here. Let's go back to baseball. baseball will be played across the pond next weekend.
Where?
The MLB will be going to London.
Okay.
Just like the NFL.
Who are they playing? Who's playing?
The St. Louis Cardinals and the Chicago Cubs will be playing in London. They'll be playing two games in London.
Okay, okay.
And they'll be playing in London Stadium. And are we seeing something that the NFL has been doing? As you know, the NFL's been playing several games over in London.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Years. Well, guess what? MLB is starting to do the same thing. They'll be playing some games this year in 2024 and in 2026 across the pond. Now, you notice I didn't mention 2025.
Right.
You know why?
Why?
Because in 2025, the MLB will take two teams and play in Paris, France.
Okay.
So what's the MLB trying to do? Are they trying to follow a trend that the NFL are doing? Maybe.
Possibly. I mean, it's made them a lot of money. It's made the NFL a lot of money.
It's made a lot of money for the NFL. And MLB is saying, hey, why don't we do the same thing?
Exactly. Exactly.
So let's, I'm flipping and flopping all over the place. I'm back and forth. I'm going to go back to the NBA for one last thing.
Okay. Okay.
This just upsets me. You know, you got a lot of athletes out there in the NFL, the MLB, and the NBA making a whole lot of money.
Right.
And this young man has got to be, you know what? I am very disappointed in African-American young athletes. Ja Morant, and I know everybody heard it.
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
you heard about it. 25-game suspension for his shenanigans. And you know what? It's sad because I think about Ja Morant. I think about Gervonta Davis. You guys are young guys making – you're millionaires.
Tons of money.
Why are you out there doing these shenanigans and just doing stuff that – I just don't get it, Brother B. I don't
either.
It's crazy.
Tons of money.
And you're out here doing stupid stuff. You know, I was speaking with someone, and it's like, why not – you want to give back to your city, you want to be a part of your city, you want to be a part of whatever it is that makes you the superstar that you are and get you a whole lot of money, fine, do it. But cut the shenanigans out.
Right.
It's not necessary.
Do you remember Plaxico Burress when he shot himself in the leg in the club?
Oh, I definitely remember that.
Around the same time, there was a guy named Spanks who played for the Redskins. They were the Redskins at the time. He was a receiver. And he got into a fight in a bar in a club downtown in D.C. and he got stabbed, right? So he was out for several games. And one of the reporters interviewed him and asked him, you know, why, with all that he has going for him, would he put himself in a position to be in a club and get into a fight and get stabbed? And he says something that's very profound that I'll never forget. He said, just because I'm paid like a middle-aged man doesn't mean that I'm as wise as a middle-aged man. He said, I'm still 20-21. This is where all my friends are. Why can't I go to a club and be a 21-year-old because I make millions of dollars? They're going to do stupid stuff because they're young.
But you know what, Brother B? This is what's going on. The NFL is starting to do something that hopefully will get these young men on the right track. Hope the NBA does it. And it's like they're starting to have little seminars. They're having meetings. They're having all types of things where these guys will have a chance to talk to people and say, hey, yes, you're a young athlete, but you're also a millionaire. You're a role model, and you need to start being accountable for your actions. You need to put all that silly stuff away. I wish I had the opportunity these young men have.
But they
you
get
and
all
I
this
be
counseling.
Out here, and we make what we make.
Right.
And we out here, and we grinding. And you know, these are talented young men, and they need to realize that, hey, people are watching you. You're under a microscope now. Let me tell you something, Brother B. If it were me, and I had the opportunity these young men had, okay, you know what? I got my mansion, I got my 10 cars, I got whatever it is I have. I'm going to do it wherever it is that I live. I'm going to build in my basement or whatever it is I build. I'm going to build my little stripper club, and I'm going to have my little club, and I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to have my little gun range. I'm going to do what I want to do and on my property. I'm not going to be out in public. I'm not going to be out in the public eye. Nobody, because social media out here is just like vicious these days. They catch everything that you do.
They really do.
But if I'm in private, in my own little space, you ain't going to see what I'm doing. And trust and believe, Brother B, I'm going to do my thing.
But I'm sure a lot of people thought like that. You look at somebody like a Paul Pierce who thought the same thing, but One of his homies sold him out. You know, your homies will sell you out even in your own house. They got their cell phones going. You know what I'm saying?
Well, see, Brother B, you got to keep your circle small.
Right.
You can't just be wide open like these guys are these days.
Right.
But you know what?
Right.
Enough of that. Here's one thing that's just profound to me.
Okay.
But it's all good. And I ain't hating on this team. I'm not a big fan of them. I'm talking about those Super Bowl champions, Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
Their Super Bowl ring reportedly has over 600 diamonds in their ring.
Oh, my God.
Now,
why?
They say diamonds is a girl's best friend, and that's cool. And all you got to do is give a girl one diamond, and she's going to love you forever.
Right.
Over 600 diamonds in a ring.
Why?
For a game that you play.
Why?
That you're getting paid for. That's a little crazy, Brother B. I'm trying to tell you. But hey, I ain't hating on the Chiefs. Celebrate on, gentlemen. Celebrate on. You know what? You know, football's my thing.
Right.
The NFL, we are weeks away from training camp starting. And this is what's intriguing to me. And I think there's a trend starting here. And check this out. I really think that this is something that's going to happen in the future. The XFL continues to send players to the NFL.
Right.
Now, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you people know this. The XFL reported a loss of over $60 million.
Yeah, I was reading that today.
But they said they'll be back next year. And you know what? If they're sending talent to the NFL, maybe the NFL, who makes billions, maybe trillions of dollars every year, should say, hey, we can get talent from this league. Maybe that can be our minor leagues. And maybe they can pump some money into the XFL.
Well, the only problem with that is that egos will clash, because Dwayne Johnson doesn't want anybody having any control over his creation or his investment.
Oh, Brother B.
And the NFL.
Listen to me, something, Brother B. This could be an advantage for Dwayne Johnson and the XFL. You have a major entity. You have a machine pumping money into your business. You'd be crazy not to think about, hey, if you want to pump money into my business to keep it moving, keep it thriving, why not?
No one's going to pump that kind of money into an organization and not want to have control over it. And that's the problem. Once they swallow him up, he'll no longer be with the XFL. They'll just steal it from him. I know it. And I know that's what he's going to think. Ain't no way.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something, Brother B. If you're a major corporation and you want to pump money into whatever it is I was doing, I would welcome them. And I'm not going to let my ego get in the way. I'm thinking about, hey, I'm providing a service to a major business, so let me go ahead and do my thing. Because guess what? I'm going to get paid, too.
Right.
But you know what? That's how I think. The Rock has made a lot of money doing what he does.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. Maybe egos will clash there.
I think
so. You know, we'll see. And speaking of football and leagues that aren't the NFL, we're into the final weekend of the USFL.
Right.
You know, I haven't been talking too much about it.
No, you haven't, man.
Even though I like to play, I'm not as impressed with them as I have been with the XFL. It's just something about it. It's just not making me excited. I'm just not feeling it. I don't know. I like to play because, you know, I'm a football guy, but it's just something about it just not like getting me excited.
Okay.
But this excites me.
Okay.
In the Northern Division of the USFL, there are four teams. All four of those teams are below 500, but two of those four teams have the opportunity to make the playoffs.
Right.
And they're below 500. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
All four teams are below 500. Two of them are going to make the playoffs.
None of them is running away with the league. And what's crazy to me is the play is good. Like, I can literally sit and watch an entire USFL game and not feel like I'm missing a whole lot of skill, you know? The skill level is not that much lower than the NFL to me. And the coverage is great. So it's
crazy.
Well,
let me tell you, and I agree with you, but let me tell you something, Brother B. Out of all that, you know, the championship is on July the 1st. I'm looking at Birmingham. I'm looking at New Orleans. And I'm thinking one of those two teams will be the USFL champs.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
I'm looking at Birmingham.
You like Birmingham?
I do.
I kind of like them, but watch out for those breakers out of New Orleans.
Okay.
Because it just might happen.
Okay.
It just might happen. Now, these are some things that are a little sad. And like I said, I'm all over the place with everything. Finally, Deion Sanders, prime time himself, having some health issues.
Yeah, I heard about that.
You know, he has had two toes off his left foot amputated in the past.
Right.
And it's a possibility he may have his whole left foot amputated.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And
that's a shame.
Think about that brother running up and down the field, doing what he did, not only as one of the greatest cornerbacks in the league, but also as a receiver. Just thinking, you know, he will have a left foot amputated, it just saddens me.
Right. Not to mention, he wasn't too much of a slouch playing baseball either.
Oh, well, we can add that too. I can remember the time when, you know, he played in an NFL playoff game and then played in a World Series.
Yeah, quite a helicopter.
He was very talented. Yeah, he was very talented. And, you know, to think that this is happening. I mean, you know what, Brother B, when we get older, certain things happen to us. Our health decline. And, man, when I heard about Deion, prime time, the man himself possibly getting his foot amputated, it hurt me.
Yeah.
I'm saddened by it. And I'm saddened by the fact because it is Father's Day weekend that one of your own lost his son. And
yeah.
I'm talking about the great Ray Lewis lost his son at a very young age. I'm so very sad to hear that. And I'm not a big Raven fan, but I did like Ray Lewis. If it wasn't, you know, listen, Brother B, you know I'm not a big fan of Ravens, but if I was to get a jersey of the Ravens, it would be either Ed Reed or Ray Lewis.
Yeah, I got you.
My condolence goes out to the family of Ray Lewis. And like I said, it's Father's Day weekend. And as a father myself, I would hate to think that I would have to bury my child at such a young age.
Yeah, 28 is way too young.
You know, it is. So, but you know what, Brother B? I'm happy for you being a father. I'm happy for all the fathers out there. And I just want to say, you know, enjoy the day. This is our day. And I want to say a special shout out to my father, your father, and all the fathers out there.
Absolutely.
Happy Father's Day to you. I got to get out of here because I'm about to go enjoy my day, Father's Day.
Enjoy it, man.
Hope you enjoy yours.
All right,
oh, yeah, one other thing.
What's that?
I love your show. I loved that interview last week with the governor. And hopefully you will get the mayor of Baltimore to come on and tell him the petty said. To stop ducking you, get on the show, say what you got to say. Do, you know, clear up a lot of that crap that you're talking about and all the controversy that's going on behind you. Oh, yeah, Brother B. Several years ago, before I let you go, and you probably, you and I talked about this before you became the man that you were on that station. We talked about a little bowling match.
Oh,
and this
Lord.
Is what I'm saying, Brother B. Oh, yeah, Brother B. Yeah, you forgot
Lord.
About that? Yeah, I
go.
Did.
Here
guess
we go.
What? This is what I'm saying, Brother B. I'm willing to come down to Baltimore, hopefully a couple of your listeners, because you're doing great things down there in Baltimore. Hopefully some of your listeners will come out and watch me smoke you, the man, the myth, the legend, the guy that has on the weekend, on every Sunday morning, watch the petty come out there and give it to Brother B.
You don't want none of this, man. Come on, man.
Yeah, well, whatever the case may be, Brother B, hopefully your listeners are hearing that. Hopefully your fans will come out there. All those Raven fans who hate me will come out there and watch me give it to your Brother B on the lanes.
We'll set it up.
I got to get out of here. Peace.
Peace, brother. Out. You know, I always love talking to the petty. I could talk to him all day. But, you know, on this show, I can't. So, got to say goodbye to him. And, you know, I got to thank again the governor for coming on today. It's always great talking to him. He's such an easy person to talk to, and he gets his point across very eloquently. And I appreciate his time that he's given us here at 1500 Radio. And, of course, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for joining me again, and I hope you enjoyed the interview and the show. But before I go, I wanted to mention a couple of things. One is that if you miss any of these shows, if you've missed them or if your friends have missed them, I don't have to replay them for you. You can go to my website, voiceswired.com. That's voiceswired.com. And it's free. Just go click on the Weekend Edition tab and you will see all of the shows archived, and they are chronicled.